Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Audio Road. Welcome to Trends in Technology. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa Campbell is your producer and call screener extraordinaire. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show where we explore what's going on in the trucking industry. It's a mix of new products, new services, and new technology. We'll also bring you expert guests from all areas of the industry, such as Bruce Mallinson on diesel engines and performance, and Mike Beckett on tires and alignment, as well as many others. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in with your question or comment. It's up to you. This is your show. Once again, welcome to Trends in Technology, and here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin, press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your call. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to the audio road. And we've done some switching around. Tonight is Trends and Technology. We're going to play around a little bit with doing Trends and Technology on Wednesday night and questions from the audio road on Friday night. So if you're wondering, that's what's going on with that. We've got a special guest tonight. Bruce Mallinson's going to be with us from Pittsburgh Power. I'm going to get to that call in just a minute. And Bruce and I have some catching up on to do. We've both been busy. If you've got any questions tonight, we're going to go over the Signature 389, some of the specs and the process that went into building that truck. But as always, any questions you've got, phone lines are open tonight. If you're listening online and you want to join in with us, go ahead and dial us up right now, 347-884-8327 is the number for the live call, and we've got lines open. You can dial from your phone, you can listen on your phone, or if you want to join in the conversation, if you're on the call, press 1 at any time. You'll talk to Lisa first, and she'll get you screened and ready to come on with Bruce and I. You can start lining up those calls right now. You know what? I had a couple things I was going to open with, but I'm just going to get right to Bruce because I know we've always got a lot to talk about. So, Bruce, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. How are you?
I am doing great. How are you tonight?
Very good. Way behind in returning my phone calls. I haven't been able to answer an email for over a week. I was out of town the past Monday and Tuesday, not this past week, the week ago, and I haven't been able to get caught up. So the calls have been overwhelming.
Well, you know, I every time I travel or we've got an event going on or a truck show or whatever it might be, I always say to myself, you know, I'm going to make sure I get up in the morning, I return calls, I'll return calls before I go to bed at night, but no matter how hard you try, when you've got a week like that, you just get behind.
Oh, it's very difficult. And they're all good, legitimate questions, but occasionally you get a question like, my DDEC 5 is using coolant, what should I do? Well, call Detroit or call your truck dealer. You know, it's stuff like that. Well, where should I look and what should I do? And yeah,
right.
It's calls like that are really tying us up for the people that have calls about glider kits and engine rebuilds and engine modifications and fuel mileage enhancements.
Yeah, and the calls can take a lot of time. You know,
and
you want to spend time with people on the phone. I know you're exactly like I am. When I get on the phone with somebody, you want to spend time with them. You want to help them out, but there's only so many minutes in a day.
Right. It's not unusual to be on a phone 20 minutes to a half hour per call. So that only allows you 16 to 18 calls per day, and I need to take about 40 phone calls per day. So it's a difficult situation.
It is. So I understand you guys are pretty busy at the shop.
We are. We're very busy. Sid had an accident. He fell from a ladder in his own garage and landed backwards on his back on concrete and broke two ribs, collarbone, punctured a lung, and ended up with a concussion.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, and at 60 years old, that's not a good thing. So he's been 2.5 weeks flat on his back, doctor's orders not to work yet, so we don't have him back. And he says, wow, you can't imagine how much I miss not being able to work. And if those of us that do work and sometimes complain about it, if you ever lose your health and you're bedridden like that, you really find out how wonderful it is to be able to get up in the morning and go to work.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And, you know, we all do it. You know, we get busy and you don't get days off a lot of times, and sometimes you do complain a little bit about work, but it is better than the alternative.
It certainly is. And we hope to have him back next week in a supervisory capacity where he won't be able to build an engine yet, but hopefully the following week. But you know what will happen as soon as he gets back in the shop. That'll come back to him. He's got two Caterpillar engines sitting there to build for two glider kits.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight, too. You better get caught up, though. We've got a pretty busy summer ahead of us.
Oh, I mean, here we leave in, what, 2 weeks for the Vegas show?
2 weeks.
Is it 2 weeks?
And
then Fernando, our one mechanical engineer, is getting married in Cancun.
Yes.
So I have to fly from Vegas on a red eye on Saturday night, all night long. I have to fly from Las Vegas to Charlotte to Cancun. After working the show all day and tearing down the booth, get on a plane and be up all night. I mean, that's just going to be brutal.
It sounds Bruce Mallinson. Wait a minute. It sounds like Bruce Mallinson is complaining because he's flying to Cancun.
Oh, I know. You know, I'm sure it's going to be a wonderful place to go, but I don't do well staying up all night, and I don't sleep on airplanes. So then it takes a couple of days to get back to your schedule. So that's 2 weeks I'll be gone, and then I'm home for 2 weeks, and then it's off to the Walcott show, and then on to the CMC.
That's what I mean. It is a busy summer. I mean, there's something going on every couple weeks. All summer long. I mean, we're trying to get prepared for it now, and we're starting to run out of time already.
Yeah, it's incredible. And then we have the Dallas show in August, and then we have the English Town Truck Drags, and I'm not sure if we're going to go there in September. October, there's two shows. There's one in Charlotte, North Carolina at the Speedway, and there is the Large Car Magazine show in Petersburg, Virginia at the Dragway there.
Crazy schedule.
And then people call and wonder why you're not there. Oh, you were on vacation. No, I wasn't on vacation. I was working a show.
Well,
but life is good. Everything is wonderful.
Yes.
And
so let's talk about this truck. We sent out an email today. Did you see the email? Boy, you know, I even get excited looking at that truck and reading about it.
Oh, it's a wonderful truck. It has a lot of potential. There's been four people that have been trying to get financing for it, and their banker just doesn't understand the term glider kit.
Right. Yeah, no question. I'm interested with the way it's been built and the specs to see. I really hope we put it in the hands of the right person, somebody who's interested in fuel mileage, to see what kind of mileage we can get out of a truck like that.
Right. Gosh, there goes my cell phone right now. Okay. Well, that call is coming from Brent Noakes, and that name should ring a bell to you. That's the fellow that's going to own and manage the location in Redding, California.
Ah, that's right. Let's talk about that a little.
And he's now open for business.
Oh, he is? Okay.
Yes, and he's 22 or 23 years, an owner-operator, drives an 03 Peterbilt, is a log hauler. It's got a 6NZ Caterpillar in it, and so he knows trucks from bumper to bumper. And here's his phone number if anybody's in the Redding, California, runs the I-5 corridor. It's 541-281-3630.
Okay, so tell us about the shop. What's going on with that?
We actually have a fully equipped shop. It's a shop that's the fellow that he is leased to that does the logging, it's his shop that we're operating out of, and he doesn't use it. And it's got the bolt bins, and it's got the grease racks and everything else in it. So we've got air compressors. It's a ready-to-go shop. But what we do need are people to make reservations, because until things pick up, Brent and the lead mechanic, who is also an owner-operator, are still trucking. And they're logging. But they're open for business, and they do have some parts in stock.
Got it. Okay.
And they're right down the street from Peterson Caterpillar.
Okay. Excellent. So that's in, where is that again?
Redding, California.
Redding.
Northern California. That's to help the people that run the I-5 corridor, the Seattle, Portland, down to San Francisco and Los Angeles.
Okay,
I'm surprised at how many people just run that I-5 corridor. They never deviate from that.
No, that's a pretty heavily traveled lane, and you're right. A lot of times if somebody runs that lane, that's primarily where they stay the whole time.
Yes.
Well, make sure you get Lisa the information so we can keep everybody updated on that.
I will. He just sent me a text. I told him to get on the show tonight.
Yeah, he should.
Okay, on the Peterbilt, the 389, you know, we have the 264s, we have the super single Michelins on there, we have the double over 18 speed, of which you only use the first 16 gears. Everything on this Caterpillar was done. The block was line bored, the block was squared, resurfaced. And I don't know if a lot of people know what the term squared means. Squared is... not only can a block bow, but it can warp. So think of it bending right to left, and think of it bowing, the front side being higher than the back or vice versa. So what you do is, after you do your line bore, you measure from the center of the crankshaft bore to the top deck. And you measure number one cylinder, and you measure number six. Whichever one is higher, that's how it's put into the machine, and then it's resurfaced. You may take 8,000ths off the back, but only 6,000ths off the front. That's squaring the block so that you have the same compression ratio when number one piston comes up as when number six comes up.
So, and I remember, you know, you and I talking about this when we were building the original Signature engine. Once that block, when we take a new manufactured block and you run it for a million miles or whatever we're going to put on it, and that bowing and that warping happens, then when you take it and you do all this and you square it and true it and all these things, it's really better than new at that point, right? Because it's never going to do that again.
Yeah, it never warps. Once it does its initial warp after a couple hundred thousand miles, it never warps again. And I've had some owner-operators call me and say, do you know so-and-so at such-and-such shop? And I said, oh, I know him quite well. Well, he doesn't believe that that block will warp or bow. I said, well, you know, a small block Chevy does it.
Yeah, yeah.
If a small block V8, that's how long are they? 2 feet?
Right.
And now we're taking a 4-foot-long piece of cast iron? Of course it warps. I mean, that's why the crankshafts will bend 28,000ths.
Well, and it's not a matter of opinion. I mean, it's a matter of measurement. When you measure these things, you see the warpage on it. You see the bowing.
Right.
I mean, it's not like you've made it up. It's there in black and white. It's measurable.
That's exactly correct.
So what else? So this thing was taken right down to the block, and all of this happens to the blocks. We've got a nice, straight, true block. What do we do from there?
Well, we do the line bore. Okay, so the block's done. Then we do polish, magnaflux, and straightening of the crankshaft. And then the crank is finished. The block's
so
finished.
You know, that one was hard for me to imagine in the beginning.
The bending of the cranks.
Yeah, when you see that crank, and you know, when you see one, and how big and how solid and heavy, and to think about that bending, and then to think about bending it back and getting it true and straight again, that was pretty amazing for me. The first time I learned that was when we were building the signature engine.
Oh, it's amazing. It's truly amazing whenever you see that. I was quite shocked. I learned that about 28 years ago on a big Cam Cummins when they told me the crank was bent. I said, nah, cranks can't bend. And they said, well, come on down here. And I went down and they had the Dow indicator on it. I said, you've got to be kidding me. And, you know, drive shaft does the same thing. That's why every half a million miles you should yank your drive shaft out and take it to a drive shaft shop and get it trued and get it rebuilt, but people don't.
Well, what was amazing to me was when you look at the way the crank fits inside the block and when you look at the tolerances and how tight everything is, and then imagine what happens when that crank bends a little bit and the block was warped a little bit and all of those things start to bind and put pressure on different points. But when we were putting the signature engine back together, when we were building it, and this is all on the DVD, what you showed me was even as heavy as that crank is, when it was sitting in there, everything was trued and straightened, I was able to turn it very easily by hand. That was amazing.
Right.
It didn't bind anywhere. It just turned very smoothly through the whole rotation.
Right there you're taking on that Detroit crank. It probably weighs 350 pounds. The Caterpillar is close to 400, and you were able to turn it with one hand.
Yeah. Easily, and you could feel how smooth it would turn through the whole rotation. There was no binding whatsoever.
Right. And then so after that, we take the connecting rods, the Caterpillar reman rods, or Detroit or Cummins, and they're balanced. They're weighed to get the total weight, and you put the light ones with the light ones, the heavy ones with the heavy ones, and then you weigh the wrist pin end, and then you weigh the crankshaft end. And then you try to bring them in as close as you can. It's getting pretty difficult. Sometimes the rods are so far out that you can't balance six rods. You have to use 12 rods to come up with six.
That's another interesting point. And again, when we all this is on the DVD and when we were doing this, when you start to look at all these different steps, and normally, I mean, most of these steps aren't done, certainly not on an in-frame. They can't be done. But even when you buy a reman engine or an out-of-frame, how many other shops go through these kind of procedures on an engine?
Well, I tell you, I don't know too many people because I'll get a phone call. Oh, I just had my engine completely rebuilt. I said, how much did it cost? $14,000. I said, well, you didn't have it completely rebuilt because that's a basic in chassis.
Right.
The basic parts. I mean, if you buy the Caterpillar, I think they call it the Platinum Rebuild Kit, it's $11,000 or $12,000. And then you have $3,000 to $4,000 labor on top of that. And there's no crankshaft damper in there. There's no ceramic and Teflon coating on the pistons. There's no ported jet hot coated manifold. No fast fuel system. No larger turbo.
They're not balancing the connecting rods.
No, the rods aren't balanced and the pistons aren't balanced. And let me tell you something else that just came up yesterday. And this is pertaining to Caterpillar cylinder kits. And this came from a very reliable source, friend of mine that's a service manager for Caterpillar. He said they're having a clearance problem. And he said you're best to take apart the cylinder packs, dowel bore gauge the liners, and mic the pistons, and put the small pistons with the smaller bore liner and the larger pistons with the larger bore. If you've had some calls where people are getting engines rebuilt and scoring cylinder kits, that's why. And, I mean, I was shocked when I heard this. 32 years we haven't had this problem.
So we've actually got either the liners or the pistons, the sizes aren't matching, right?
The sizes are not matching right. This is what I know. I haven't taken any apart to do this because you have to have the liner in the engine to be held by the block when you go to run a Dalbor gauge down through it. I'm saying it's pretty sad right now because a lot of times you'll get six connecting rods, two from one country, two from another, and two from another.
Well, no wonder why you can't get them balanced then.
Sure. You'll get two from China, two from Mexico, and two from God knows where. And then there's recon injector problems, whether it's on Cummins, Cats, and I haven't had the problem yet on Detroit's. But if we put them in and people have a miss, they want to blame us. Wait a second.
Right.
Wait a second. The factory rebuilt that injector.
Right.
And when you use a factory head, then there's a problem. We just had to put injector cups in a fairly new Caterpillar head. Shouldn't have to do this.
What was wrong with the cups?
He was getting fuel into the radiator. Fortunately, they made it so you can change them on the truck without pulling the head.
So this was it a remand head?
Yeah, it was a Cat remand head.
But they don't replace the cups when they do it?
They do. Years ago, on the early big Kims, Cummins went from copper to brass on the injector cups. Well, brass was too brittle, and it would crack. And then you would fill your cooling system with diesel fuel. And then they went back to the copper, and that problem went away then. But right now, there's a lot of problems in the industry, and they're starting to surface. There's a shortage of parts because people are getting wise and keeping older trucks and rebuilding them.
Hey, you know, I think I was just right before the show, I was looking.
You there? Kevin?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Oh, I lost you there for a second.
Okay. Not sure what was going on there. On a Cat, same as a Detroit then, if we start to have, if there's a problem with the injector cup, like they wear through or we could build pressure in the radiator the same way?
Yes, if it's fuel.
Got
it's
it.
Diesel fuel okay. In there, and diesel fuel will cool. I mean, you won't run hot, but you will overflow the rad.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to go back and look. Somewhere in the forums just today, somebody with a Cat was blowing pressure out the radiator, and they didn't know why. They got it to the shop, and the shop couldn't find anything. The shop thought it might have been a head gasket.
No. If I lose you, we have quite a storm going on. Tornado warnings for Pittsburgh tonight. I mean, but we're 35 miles north. But there's some lightning going on right now. So it's generally, if you have diesel fuel in the radiator, it's injector tubes.
Yeah, I guess that would be the first thing to check on in that case then, to see if they can detect any diesel
right.
fuel.
Right.
Okay. Hey, one thing I want to go back and correct, because when you first started talking about the truck, you said the rear ends were 264, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Because I know on the spec sheet that we sent out, we've got 355, and I'm not sure where we got that from.
We have both. We have the 355s there, and we have the 264s there. If we have somebody that can't deal with the 264s, they can have the 355s.
Got it. Okay. You know, speaking of which, I've been reading. You know, I have my new iPad now, and I can get magazine subscriptions electronically. And the magazine is exactly the same as it is if you picked up the paper copy. Every page, every article, everything is identical. You flip pages with your finger just like you would on a magazine. It's pretty cool. But because I get them all electronically, now I'm starting to get truck magazines from other countries. Like right now,
mm-hmm.
I'm getting England and New Zealand, and it was just interesting to look at the way they build their trucks in England. A lot of
hold on, hold on.
Pretty high horsepower, single axle trucks with 253 rear ends and direct drive transmissions.
They have a 253 gear.
253, yeah.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, real common over the all cab overs, single axles, and a lot of direct drives with 253s.
Right. Hold on just one second, Ken.
Hey, that's 347-884.
I'll keep everybody entertained. I'll do a little song and dance while Bruce takes care of some work there. I know he is busy and behind. But if you've got any questions, we are going to start getting to those soon. So if you're on the call with us, press 1, and Lisa will screen your call. If you are listening online and you want to join us, the number to dial is 347-884-8327. And then once you're on that call, press 1, and Lisa will get to your call. Bruce, are you back?
I am.
All right. So, I know we've got a lot going on. Let's get back to the engine. And again, before we go back into kind of the progression and everything that got built on that engine, this is really the way that race engines are built. I mean, this isn't a typical engine. This is way better than factory, because the cranks you're pulling out of factory engines are that far out of balance. And it's, you know, you're really never going to get an engine to run as smooth as it should when you've got all these problems. I know the factory says, well, it's within tolerance and it's within spec, but it's not anywhere near the way you built that engine.
That's correct. I mean, they probably give the Chinese a spec, they give the Mexicans a spec, they give the people in Singapore a spec. And it's a shame what's happened, you know. We've had the union greed in the 60s and the 70s, and now we have corporate leader greed in the 80s, 90s, and the 2000s. And it's hard, so we have to take what we have, what the factory will give us, and then we have to work it from there. But when we build these engines, whether it's a Detroit, a Cummins, or a Cat, we do absolutely this everything that we did back in the 70s when we'd build a race car engine.
Right. And you know, we used to refer to it as porting, polishing, balancing, blueprinting. I mean, it's really taking the engine and instead of just living with whatever the spec was, really making that engine as good as it can possibly be, each component, you know, from the bottom up.
Now, you know, let's pick on Detroit for a spec here. You know, the Detroit rods are as much as 110 grams out. But think about something as simple as an exhaust manifold, where the two ends come into the center. We have gaps as large as 8 and 9 thousandths. Now, how are you supposed to seal exhaust?
Yeah.
So before we port them and jet hot coat them, they're mic'd, and some are sent back to Detroit. So now we're making, and hopefully we'll have it in about a month, a new center section that will be held to much tighter tolerances, because a lot of the Detroit manifolds are leaking at the joints, and this just shouldn't be.
No, absolutely. All right.
And if somebody could tell us a better way to build the engine, we would do it. You know, the only thing that we did on those small block Chevys way back then was down in the V around the lifter bores, all that was, I don't want to say polished, but it was die grind to allow the oil to go further or faster back into the oil pan. Now, we're not die grinding inside the diesel engine blocks for that, because there's not a V there. It's falling straight down.
Right.
But that's the only thing, as I sit back and think about everything that we did to make an engine perfect back then, and that's how we're building the diesel engines today. But you know how much money this is costing now?
Yeah. Well, tell us, because I know it's pretty expensive.
$33,000 to do a Caterpillar. And then you pay $8,000 for the core. So now you have $40,500 tied up in just the engine.
Wow.
So here's something that I tell people. They say, well, you know, I've got a guy called today with an N14 with 1,100,000, and he wants to rebuild it, but he's, no, I'm sorry, it was a 6NZ Cat. But he burns a gallon of oil in 15,000 miles. I said, well, there's nothing wrong with it. Don't rebuild it. But you've never changed the crankshaft damper. Let's do the damper and the balancer. Let's do the ported manifold. Do the fast fuel system. Do the bigger turbo. Do all the things you can do on the outside of the engine, because that's about $6,000 worth of stuff. And do
right.
a piece, do one piece every month, and you'll see the engine's running more free. Oh, and then, and of course, the OPS bypass filter. And whenever they do that, they say, wow, now I can run 18,000 miles before I burn the first gallon. So why rebuild that engine? Because that engine's going to run for a couple hundred thousand more, if not more than that. And if you do the fast system and the damper, the balancer, and the manifold, and the OPS-1, you've just saved yourself about $6,000 come rebuild time.
Yeah, instead of waiting for the rebuild and
right.
having to come up with all of that money at once, like you said, let's do the external parts, and you see an immediate return on investment with those anyway. They start saving you money right off the bat, and then when it is time for rebuild, we don't have to come up, well, we still have to come up with a lot of money, but not nearly as much. Get all the other stuff taken care of.
Right.
Well, you know, I've got to I need to start doing that here soon. I mean, Lisa and I are back in Florida, and I got to tell you, when I took over the trucks in October, I think, of last year, Lisa and I came back down, started working hands-on with the trucks again in October. They had fallen into the low sixes for fuel mileage, which was just, you know, horrible for what I used to do with them. And now we are back. If I ran a fleet average for the last, I think I could almost go back 30 days now. I know if I went back 14 running now 7.5 or above on all three trucks.
That's great. Maybe this fall we'll have to get down there and do manifolds and things like that. Not in the summer. It's too hot down there to work.
Well, I know, as busy as you are, and it is too hot, we're busy. You might just have to ship the parts down here, and I might have to get the
right.
shop to come on. And what we're doing, it's really interesting, because it was. I'm almost glad the trucks had gotten, you know, I hadn't been controlling the trucks for over 2 years. But it's interesting now to go back and try to take old trucks that, the fuel mileage had dropped on them horribly, and see what it takes to get it back and what works and what doesn't. And we've been testing, you know, 30 days per change. So we'll make a change. We do the 30-day running average prior to making a change, and then we do a 30-day average after. And we can see, you know, what's working and what isn't. And so we're coming up towards the end of a couple tests, and we've got a couple more things to test, but I really want to get the manifold and the turbo. Actually, what I want to do, because none of my trucks idle, so I think I want to build the entire exhaust system from the manifold back, manifold, turbo, muffler, and keep it as a weed burner and see what that does.
We can do that.
We can do that.
Yeah, I think that'll make a big change on mine, so we're looking forward to that. I'll tell you that I haven't had a chance to talk with you about this yet. We started testing the Evans coolant 3 weeks ago on two trucks. That's the waterless coolant.
Right.
And when we converted over, the cooling efficiency is so much better on the Evans coolant without any water in it. It doesn't boil till 375 degrees. And that's without pressure. We don't even have to pressurize it to get that boiling point. We took two pre-EGR Detroits, and we've got 215-degree thermostats in them, and we put resistor packs on the fan, so the fan's not coming on till 230. So we're running them a little bit hotter than we were before, and both of them are running better, and the fuel mileage is up on both of them.
Wow. That's hard for us old guys, for us old school guys to take, to look at a temperature gauge that high.
Well, you know, all the EGR engines are running that high.
Right. Hey, have you talked about the CMC and the people that want to do, learn how to work on their truck in the parking lot, that they need to call us and tell me what parts they want me to bring?
No, that's a good point, though, because we are, you know, we've been sold out since, I mean, we sold out in probably about 30 days, and sold out for us is 100 seats, and there's going to be probably a total of 125 people or so between speakers and vendors and some guests that we've invited, but sold out is 100 seats. And what happens is as we get closer to the event, we always have some people who need to cancel for whatever reason, and they'll, you know, reschedule for the next event or whatever. So Lisa's constantly replacing one or two seats, but we're it's going to be a packed house. I mean, we're right at 100 right now, and when, you know, everybody, we're going to be 120 to 130 people. So you are going to be doing hands-on parts replacements out in the parking lot.
Yeah, I'm not going to be doing it. I'm going to be instructing the owner-operator on how to do it.
There you go. That's okay. Even better.
I'll be the teacher. They'll be the student. This is for those that are not mechanically inclined. I'll bring some tools. They need to bring tools. But I'm not going to show up. My understanding is there's going to be 70 rigs there. I'm not going to bring 70 boost gauges, 70 pyrometers, 70 crankshaft dampers and balancers. I need to know what these people want to do.
Got it. Okay. So, we will, you know, certainly if anybody attending is on the call now, they can certainly let us know, but we will also send out an email to everybody who's attending and
okay.
let them know
okay.
that they need to, and Lisa will coordinate all of that.
Very good. Very good. Okay. Okay.
We are, we're looking forward to it. It's going to be a great event. We've got a lot going on in 4 days. Well, you've kind of unofficially extended it to 5 days, right?
Yeah, if the guys want to stay and work on Friday, I'll be there.
Yeah, we...
they don't want to work on Friday, then that's okay, too.
Well,
this is a chance for the owner-operator to learn how to work on his truck. This is for the people that do not know how to work. And those that are coming that are mechanically inclined, I'd like you to bring your tools and your work clothes, too, to help us. Because if all 70 people wanted to put stuff on their truck, I couldn't possibly instruct all 70. But there's a tremendous amount of owner-operators out there that are extremely mechanically inclined, and some do come to the CMCs, and I would love to have their help.
Yeah, you know, the last event we did was one of our smaller ones in Cleveland. We it was near the holidays, and we announced it late, but we really wanted to do one, and it turned out for a smaller event, it was a lot of fun. We got to spend a lot of time with people, but I know that every time we had a break and afterwards every night, and then even the day after, there were a lot of owner-operators out in the parking lot helping. You know, everybody was learning. So this one, I'm really looking forward to it. This is going to be exciting.
Right, right. Well, do you think we should take some calls?
I think we should. Let's start off. I think I'm just going to go.
I think Brent Noakes is trying to call in.
We've got a lot of lines. We're up. I think we've got almost 100 lines taken up on this call, so it's taking me a second to scroll through here. I'm just going to start at the top and go down. Let's go to Arizona. Ryan, welcome to the program.
Good evening, fellas. It's good to talk to both of you all again.
Well, thank you.
Bruce, I've got a question for you. I've got a 2005 BXS Acer Caterpillar.
It's a B? It's an 05 and a B with a BXS?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Before I knew how to drive this thing in the hills, I went ahead and followed some forums and put a 100-ohm resistor in place of my fuel temperature sensor. Everybody says, oh, you get a half a mile to the gallon and an extra 100 horsepower and
That's about 40 horsepower.
Well, it did feel good, but I didn't see any improvement in my fuel economy. And so I took it off. I just took it off last week, went through two tanks of fuel, and I've seen a substantial drop, like a half a mile to the gallon drop. What exactly does tricking the computer into thinking the fuel is cold do? Does it change my timing or...
No, whenever you put the resistor in, it's telling the ECM the fuel is hot, so give it more to cool it down. So that's why you gain the 40 horsepower, because it gives it more fuel.
Okay, so that's why I'm getting less boost. But a hot, without the resistor in, I get less boost, but my pyrometer is about 100 degrees hotter.
Is that right?
That's what's throwing me for a loop.
Well, I can tell you, you know, years ago before we had charge air coolers, we really had to watch exhaust gas temperatures. And sometimes whenever you gave a truck another 100 horsepower, it would actually run cooler.
Okay.
If you take an ex-Werner truck, Freightliner, with a D-Deck 4, and you put the bigger turbo in the firebox and straight through mufflers on it, it runs cooler.
Hmm. Yeah, this one, I mean, everything runs hotter. The water and the exhaust are both hotter. So I think I'm going to go ahead and put that resistor back in because it idled. But I mean, it did everything better. So
we haven't used those. I don't know if there's a long-term effect on tricking the ECM. With the power box, we don't need that, but I know it's certainly a very economical way to make 40 more horsepower.
Yeah, I went to CAP the other day and asked about an update, and the guy says, you don't need an update. You're already bypassing your fuel temperature sensor. There's no sense in even putting an update in there. So made me scratch my head. But well, thank you for the insight. I do appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right, let's see. Bruce, I'm kind of flying blind here because we got so many calls.
You see any from Redding, California, that ended 3630?
Well, normally, because I can't talk and look and chew gum at the same time, I'm not good at multitasking. Lisa would do that, but we got so many calls. She got bumped off the call, and she's not able to get back in. So
okay. Maybe we better stay on till about 2 or 3 in the morning and answer these.
I'm kind of winging it here, trying to figure out who's who on the call. Let's go to West Virginia. Roland, welcome.
Hey, KR and Bruce, how are you?
Great.
Doing good. What's on your mind?
My question for Bruce is strictly external modification, N14 red top 99 model, not fuel, not electronics, strictly the Pittsburgh power muffler, low restriction air cleaners, and ram air. Will the stock ECM, I spool up quicker and all that, but will the stock ECM start pulling fuel out at, say, 32 pounds of boost?
32 pound is what a 5 1/4 N14 requires.
All right.
So if you go much over that, it could start to derate it.
Well, the freer flowing air cleaners, the ram air, and the Pittsburgh muffler, should they give me some more boost?
They should give you a little bit more.
But at some point, will the ECM curtail that?
Yeah, but I think you got to get upwards to over 35.
Right.
The reason we don't get the cut back when we put the power box on is we interrupt the signal, and we tell it like 28, 28. It's only seeing 28 pound of boost, even though you may be making 40.
Right.
So we have to trick the ECM or the signal going to the ECM. But have you not gained anything by making these changes?
I'm not tracking the fuel mileage good enough. I'm getting great mileage, but I cannot tell you the exact gains I've got.
Mm-hmm. And then you live in West Virginia, and do you truck in West Virginia?
I try to get out of here as much as I can.
I mean, it's a tough state.
It's tough. I mean, 57, I don't know. I want to roll into the next hill at 70 miles an hour, you know.
Yeah, that's what I do down through there. Sometimes 80.
The next hill is only, you know, 90 seconds away, no matter where you are.
Do you know what was considered the hardest part of the country on semi-trucks years ago?
I don't.
The Oakland, Maryland area, over where all those paper companies are, you know, the western part of Maryland, which might as well be West Virginia.
Why, just the hills?
Yeah, because of the hills.
Oh, well, there's, you might not realize it, but, or some people might not realize it, but it can be brutal over there. Hey, you better get your engineer to get married in February, and then you'll be glad to go to Cancun.
Yeah, that's right. I think when we go down there, we're going to be seeing a lot of humidity.
Yeah. If I was to make another modification, say like a turbo, and I didn't go, I was capable of 40 pounds of boost, would the stock ECM start pulling fuel out or start backing it up?
Yeah, I need to have you give me a call during the day, and I have to have a little conference call with Gary on that one. I'm not sure if it's going to do it or not. The N14 turbo is matched quite well. Keep one thing in mind, Cummins owns Holset. The Holset engineers, even though they're paid by Holset, they share offices with the Cummins engineers. So they work hand in hand and they're very close. The problem with Detroit and Caterpillar is they have to depend on the air research engineers out in Los Angeles, and these guys have a big head in their shoulders. And so it's a very good match on the N14s. And the N14 5.25 turbo is a great turbo. And, God, they're economical, too. I mean, they're a fourth the price of a rebuilt Cat turbo.
Got two things for you guys maybe want to consider on this engine building and stuff. One is, why might you have the KR and Bruce Diagnostic Center with a dyno, just a research facility with excellent, you know, brake-specific fuel consumption capabilities and measuring fuel flow? And the other thing is, have you considered making tubular exhaust manifolds out of heavy wall stainless?
You have to make sure it's heavy wall because you do not want to lose heat through the exhaust manifold. It's a combination of pressure and heat that spins the turbo. We thought about that years ago. Sat in meetings with Cummins engineers and we discussed it. The pulse manifold, when it came out in 1982 on the Big Cam 2, was built perfect. It was made perfect for the 350. It was marginal for the 400. And then here we are going 700 and 800 horsepower, and the engineers are telling us, man, you're being choked. You got to make an exhaust manifold. Well, it's an expensive proposition to make castings. And, you know, there's not a whole lot of profit in this side of the business, just like there is in trucking. So in order to do this dyno, if we wanted to put up a separate building to put the dyno in, we're talking another $400,000.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, Bruce, you and I, every time you and I get together and sit down, and there are so many projects we could be working on, so many projects we'd like to be working on. And there's a limited amount of time. I mean, most of the time, sure, sometimes it comes down to funding and money, and, you know, you have to at least be able to make, you know, the numbers work. But a lot of times it's just a matter of time, you know, with everything else going on. And speaking of time, I need to get to some calls, but Lisa never made it back into the call. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to come to a call, and I'm just going to have to do it blind, like I'm going to area code 606. Whoever might be on that line, welcome to the program.
Yeah, is that me?
That's you.
Hello. Hey, Kevin, how you doing tonight? This is Wayne.
Doing good.
Hey, Bruce.
Yes.
Two or three weeks ago, Kevin had a guy call in on the XM show, and talk about the air compressor on a Detroit running in through the intake. Well, I kind of got to worried about that, so I stopped, jerked the hood open, and looked. And it surprised me on how they've got that set up. And I changed it the next day. They've got the air compressor pulling right straight out of the intake. So I went to, Advanced Auto Parts and found, like, a little breather filter off of the car and put that on there and plugged up the hole in the intake, and it's just, wow, running so much smoother. I haven't got any fuel mileage numbers yet on it, but it just feels like there's a difference. If you
Years ago, whenever we would do that, air compressor slobber a little bit, so oil would run down the outside of them, and so they'd rather have the oil running back into the intake. This is quotes from the engineers, and it helps to lubricate the upper valve stems.
Okay.
And also they say that whenever you're going down a highway and you're under boost, then you're also turbocharging your air compressor, so the air compressor doesn't have to run as long, so it gets to shut off sooner to save more fuel.
Oh, okay. So you think it would be better to put it back in the intake then?
Well, now that you have it disconnected, keep it that way for a couple months and see what happens with your fuel mileage. I'm surprised that you could feel it running smoother.
Yeah, I was too, but it's the idle is what really feels smoother. It just, you know, right when you first start it up and everything's coming up, it just seems like it's a lot smoother.
Well, it might be because you don't have any turbo boost at that point. But when you're going down the highway, and if you're pulling a grade and you have 15 or 20 or 30 pounds of boost or even 10, you shouldn't notice a difference.
Okay. I'm not
the only way I knew mine was on in my T600 was to hear it come on and see the gauge coming up. But I never could feel it in the engine.
You haven't tried to run any dyno tests to see if that's pulling any power or anything out like that?
No, because I don't think it would be, because if you're not losing boost, the amount of air that's coming out of the turbo is way more than what the air compressor could possibly. You would see your turbo boost gauge fluctuating.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't have a gauge on this yet. Maybe we can get that at the
turbo boost gauge. That $40 gauge or the $68 kit tells you everything.
Yeah, I may have you bring that to Kansas City, and we may try to do that there or something.
We can do that. I'll bring the whole saw, so in case we have to drill holes in dashes, we'll bring the VDO cups in case we have to put them up on the top of the dash. That's where a boost gauge should be, right up on top. It should always be within your sight.
Yeah, on the A-pillar or something. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, well, that's all I had, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Hey, Kevin.
Yeah.
Brent Noakes is on a Klamath Falls, Oregon phone number. If you see Klamath Falls, Oregon, that's Brent.
Yeah. What's the area code? Do you know?
541.
Okay. I know Lisa wasn't able to get back into the call because we kind of maxed out our lines, but she's listening and she can see the calls. So, did you say 541?
That's correct.
All right. And it's Brent?
Brent Noakes.
Brent, if you're there, because I've got a 541 number here, press 1 on your phone. We'll see. I've got a 541-207-2015, but I don't think, must not be Brent. He's not showing up. We do have a couple more calls, and
okay.
We're starting to run out of time. So I'm going to...
Why don't you do this for 2 hours? Let's start an hour early next time.
You're killing me, man. kind of what my schedule's like. I mean, I literally, my alarm was set. I had to get a couple hours sleep tonight because we got up so early again today. But my alarm was set for 9:45. By the time I can, you know, get the sleep cleared out, it's, you know, 10 after 10, and we've got to get emails out, and I've got to get the show set up and get some coffee. So, yeah, I don't think we're going to be doing an extra hour anytime soon, but it'd be nice. I mean,
I'll do 2 hours with you.
We just can't seem to find that 2 hours in our schedule anywhere. Let's go to area code 443. Welcome to the program.
Hello?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
I can. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was calling about I had one of the experiences where I bought a Detroit 500, you know, crate motor. And I'm going to say it was the biggest disappointment because it had vibration, it had some things, and I take it back, and they would just charge me a bunch of money and tell me, oh, it'll straighten out, or, you know. And that was very disappointing, and I just want to make that comment. But also, too, I don't hear you guys talking about the Volvo engine very much.
You're right. You're right. You don't hear us talking about the Mac very often or the Mercedes.
Right. Yeah, we don't even talk about the Mercedes, and I own one. I try to forget that I own it sometimes.
You know what Kevin was saying there a little bit ago about having time. If we were a much, much larger company, let's say we had 100 employees instead of 18, you could put people on, and you could afford to buy a truck and have the dyno and devote the time to it. But we use owner-operators' trucks, and we use Stoops Freightliner's dyno in Indianapolis because two of our engineers live in Indy. And so we have to correlate the owner-operator passing through Indianapolis with our two engineers with, is Stoops dyno going to be available? So those are three things that have to come together. And then we only try to tie the owner-operator up for 2 to 3 hours each time he passes through. And the key is to find somebody that passes through Indianapolis that can give us 2 or 3 hours whenever they're available.
Hey, Bruce, we're just about out of time, so I really don't want to take another call because we're not going to be able to get to it. We've got about 2 minutes. But you met David Koontz from Fleet Air Filter at Louisville this year?
I did.
We've been working with him. Did you know that he went up and spent a couple days up at Jones Performance?
I had an idea he was going to be working with them on the W9 called Slick, but
yeah.
I haven't talked to Dave Jones since the Louisville show, and I need to give him a call. It's just that I have no free time at work, Kevin. I have zero free minutes.
I know. That's why I was trying to catch up. He went up there, spent some time. They came up with some really good new designs on air intake. But David Koontz is so excited about this. He's buying a used truck, and he wants to build a kind of a used signature truck like we talked about, totally reconditioned. So I have to get with you on the engine on this. Because he wants to be able to test all of his own ideas, he's going to go, like you said, sometimes you can't get the truck, you can't get the time. He's going to go build a truck and put it on the road. So I'm designing the truck for him now, and we're going to build it soon. And, I'll get you caught up on the details, but I want to make sure you can give out your number. If you want to give out your number, are you too far behind, or do you want to give it out?
No, we're okay. 724-360-4080, and our new location in Redding, California, 541-281-3630. That happens to be Brent's cell phone. So if you don't get him during the day, it may be because he's out in the woods where they're hauling logs right now. Cell phone service is pretty poor, but he will get back to you. He's very good at getting back to you, and he will make an appointment and meet you at his new shop.
30 seconds, give out those numbers again so everybody catches them.
Ours is 724-360-4080, and chances are if you call, Gary, Pete, Sean, and I are always on the telephone, so please go into one of our voicemails, leave your message, and we will get back to you. Your chances of getting one of those other three, Gary, Pete, or Sean, during the day is better than getting me. And I'm going to be hiring a fourth person or fifth person to take phone calls. Brent Noakes, 541-281-3630 for those of you who run the I-5 corridor.
Got it. Excellent. Bruce, we're all out of time. I want to thank you, and we'll do this again soon, because when you're on, we never have enough time.
You're absolutely correct. So think about do a special two-hour show whenever you have me on next.
Maybe
hey,
we
Kevin,
will.
Kevin, I'll see you in Vegas.
All right. We'll see you soon. Thanks.
Hey,
good night,
don't
everybody.
Forget to mention about the CMC, and if you want it, those parts, I need to know.
We'll do. We'll get an email. Thanks, everybody. Good night. We'll see you on the live show in 30 minutes.
Good night.